This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Con Fringe reading series.
Before we get into the Q&A session for this evening, I have a couple of announcements to make. First of all, as is kind of traditional at these things, we have a few books for sale. Jonathan here has got a copies of his own book. There's Dot Dash, which is the short fiction stuff, which I believe is an award winner of some sort. Winner of the Scott Prize, it says on the front. Then there's his fabulous novel, Mrs. Darcy versus the Aliens, which explains the true story of Pride and Prejudice. In addition to that, we have, of course, for those of you who don't yet have it, Airship Shape and Bristol Fashion, which has stories in it by Pete, by Jonathan, by Joe, and there's one in by me as well, and Ros and Joe editing it. So all of those are for sale. We are, of course, going to have another one of these next month, and I've forgotten the date at the moment. Claire, what date is it?
I can't remember the date. It's the third Monday.
Kevin, can you remember what Monday it is? I think it's probably the 19th, yeah. So, yes, Kevin Scott here is going to be reading.
I am, yes, yeah.
Well, we definitely look forward to that, and I believe that Justin, you're reading as well.
Andy. Looking forward to that as well.
Good. So we have that on the 19th. Now let's work this backwards. 19th is May. Yeah, that's right. Because on the 16th we have a special additional event for you. As some of you will know, Crime Fest, one of the UK's largest crime fiction conventions, is taking place in Bristol over that weekend. So there will be lots and lots of crime fiction writers in the city for the convention. And some of these people also write fantasy. So we had a word with them and said, can we borrow one or two of your writers for an evening? As a result of which, in Waterstones, on the evening of Friday the 16th of May, there will be an event called Murder Most Magical, featuring Jasper Ford, Ben Aronovich, and Paul Cornell. And I will get to interview them and ask them awkward questions like, why are you killing them? And isn't killing people by magic cheating? And other such penetrating questions. That one, I believe that they will ask for tickets for. It's something like £3, so it's not a huge amount. But it should be an excellent event, and I look forward to seeing some of you there. Now, has anybody else got anything that they want to let people know about? Joe?
Hello. Yeah, it's just a week on Monday, so 2 weeks today is the Bristol Fantasy and SF Society meeting in the commercial rooms, if anybody would like to come to that.
Joe has a book launch coming up, but that's on the 24th of May, so that's after our next event. Oh, we have a little book here, Anecdotes of Love and Death. Louise, would you like to explain, please?
I'm very shy about this. Andy very kindly published that book for me. It's called Anecdotes of Love and Death. And it's a little selection of short, very short stories and the odd bit of poem, but I'm not really a poet.
Marvellous. So, more fabulous fiction for people to come and buy. So, yeah, Joe's book launch May the 24th, which will be after the next lot of events. So I shall be reminding you about that, and she'll be on the radio with me before that as well. Okay, so now on to this evening, and we've got lots and lots of people, so I'll have to try and think of something entertaining to ask them all. I guess we'll start with Mazzy, because you were on first. Are you aware of Talis Kimberley, the lady who used to do songs at Bristol Con?
I'm going to ruin your question by saying the answer's no, but do feel free to ask another one.
Now that's fine, because the reason I ask you is that Talis has this song called Clever Men, which is all about her love for Brian Cox. And I think you need to listen to it. You could form a little fan club. Alrighty. So, yes, I mean, the interesting thing to me about that story was that it was Brian that was getting pregnant. So, is there some strange symbolism around that?
I've really got no idea where that comes from. It's not really my own personal obsession. I mean, like many writers, I've stolen other women's obsessions, having listened to other people banging on about Brian Cox. I kind of took that away. I mean, the thing that's most interesting to me about that story, which is probably very wrong, is that it's written in the future tense. That was what I was interested in, rather than actually necessarily the subject matter. I'm not sure why the gender reversal, just that, you know, there's often a few laughs to be had from that, and I'll always go for a cheap laugh.
Oh, nothing wrong with one or two pregnant men around the place. It'll do them some good. Jonathan, that story about the butcher was quite creepy. But of course, while I was listening to it, I was wondering whether we were ever going to find out what that thing was. Do you have anything in your head about it, or is it always going to be a mystery?
I think it's all going to be a mystery. Always going to be a mystery. I quite like the idea of not showing the monster, because an awful lot of things fall apart when you do show the monster. I mean, the classic example of that is, what's the film, 8mm, the J.J. Abrams one? No, not Cloverfield. 8mm, yeah. Which I thought was wonderful up to the point where they showed the monster, and the monster just didn't work. So I think it's great, not a good idea not to show the monster, because it just leaves it all to make it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I thoroughly agree with that. I think most films where they actually show the monster, it doesn't particularly work very well. The only one I thought did work was that Goodies episode with Kit and Kong.
Yes! Yeah. The exception.
Yep, that worked. Mr. Howard, sir, would you like to tell us a little bit more about the Goon Squad and where we can find their further adventures?
I'm producing one episode of it a month. I kicked off in January, so there's three out, and there'll be another one at the end of this month. You can find it anywhere on the net, Smashwords, Outlets, Amazon, all the usual suspects. And yes, the intention is to keep it up for at least a year, and if it's successful enough, keep rolling it out.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like it's a lot of fun, so we'll have to go and see if we can find some other episodes of that. Kevlin, you seem to have a fondness for fairy tales.
Yes, maybe. Yes, I actually wrote something recently that I didn't think was a fairy tale, and the artist who actually drew the picture that inspired it tweeted, "That's just how fairy tales should be." And it's just like, okay, I didn't even know I'd written one. So, yeah, I don't know what that is. I don't know, and I can't say I read my kids a lot of fairy tales, but clearly there's something in the historical DNA. But yeah, a good spin on a good fairy tale, because you always wonder, it's not going to be the Disney version. You know, what happens if you mess about with it? What if you got the real, not just a sort of modern interpretation, but what if the story got told and retold and eventually became a good thing rather than a bad thing? I'm always fascinated by that, the game of whispers. So, yeah, something like
that. I've just been thinking back on people's bios that I put in the PR, and I've remembered, Mazza, you mentioned that you've had one or two stories on Radio 4. Could you tell us about that?
Well, this is going back to the days when the afternoon reading or afternoon story actually had an audience. It was sort of slightly pre-drive time. And in the days when it was actually a lot easier for new writers to get a chance to get short stories on radio. I'm not quite sure where those places are anymore. I think you have to go to specific presenters. I think it's a much harder road, and it's to be regretted. So in terms of what they were, one was a winner in what was called the First Bite competition, which I think I largely entered because it was my last chance to enter a competition for the under 30s. it was my last gasp. Now I would be failing to enter a competition for the under 50s. So, no, absolutely true. So the first of those that was broadcast, I'm just trying to think, was largely just it was about a man who was confined to a wheelchair and watching the world go past, which doesn't sound like a very promising start, but I managed to knock out a whole 14-minute story on the subject of that. The second one was a sort of sub-Columbo story set in an ordinary office block, in which one of the members of staff jumps out of the window, and basically the whole mystery was to try and discover why this man had committed suicide from the office. It subsequently turned out that this man had been on hold listening to ABBA all day. and this had actually finished him off. So I give you this spoiler because you're probably unlikely to ever hear these stories in audio again. But those were probably my two earliest audio stories. Make of that what you will.
We're certainly getting some marvellous horror stories tonight, aren't we? Talking of horrible, Louise, I must confess that I find garden gnomes particularly creepy. Was that why you wrote that story?
I discovered I was a gnome lover when I went to the Christmas markets in Birmingham a couple of years ago, and I was confronted by an entire stall with gnomes. I hadn't realised until that point that I was actually a gnome lover. Anyway, I have got two gnomes, one of whom inspired the story. I'm not really a gnome lover, but, you know.
Yeah, Justin wants to know where these gnomes are.
One of them spent the winter on my kitchen table because I didn't want him to get wet. He's now sitting outside on the windowsill looking in at me. And the other one is sitting in my garden shed also, so he doesn't get wet. And he's looking out of the window over the allotment.
I'm desperately trying to suppress all of the puns in David Bowie's Laughing Gnomes, although I can't come out with any of them. I'm wondering if anybody remembers the Terry Scott and Hugh Lloyd comedy series, The Gnomes of Dulwich. I used to enjoy that. I'm not a big fan of television comedy, but that was really good. Anyway, Justin, inspired by tarot cards, is that something you do a lot?
It's the first story I've written around a tarot card, which was actually card 15, if you got the reference, which is sometimes known as the Green Man. But it was kind of a similar to yours in a way. It's kind of a meditation come story about the card and what it means and what it's trying to say. And it did give me the thought to, you know, have a go at some of the others, because they all have a message, if you like. Over the years, I haven't studied it for a while, but I have studied the tarot. So yeah, I just found it a completely different way into a story. And that's often what I try and look for in a story, somewhere, you know, a different angle, a different tangent, to show something different. It's difficult to find. There you go.
Now, thinking about an anthology called Major Arcana. Yeah, so, Pete, do you have a little brother?
No, I don't.
I do.
I was the little brother. No, it was sort of inspired by a real world event, or in fact two real world events, one of which was actually a car accident on the way back from the Isle of Wight.
Anybody got any questions that they want to ask of our readers? Justin.
I think you can tell us something about your story. Why did you write it? I mean, it was like a monologue more than a story, but you clearly you were fascinated by that whole myth. Yeah, so tell us more.
Well, the anthology title actually came first in that I saw the call for submissions from Fox Spirit for Girl at the End of the World. And I was thinking to myself, you know, assuming that the end of the world has arrived, which girl is going to survive? And the obvious answer is Ishtar, because she's tougher than anybody. And once I had her there, then I was thinking about the whole Assyrian mythology stuff and the Dragon of Chaos and probably watching too much Brian Cox. And the whole cosmology angle kind of fell out of it. And the final bit about the spear and the arrow of time and whatever came to me in a flash while I was listening to academic papers at FinCon last year. I can't even remember what the paper was that I was listening to, but it just happened and everything fell together from there. So that was it. Do we have any other questions? We can't let Justin always be the person who asks the questions. Roz?
As somebody who really struggles to keep short stories short, I'm wondering what the pros and cons are of writing Flash for you guys.
Anybody want to answer that? Kevlin?
Well, Roz, I'm glad you asked that question, because we're thinking of doing this every year. And, you know, as somebody who's read here, it'd be great to have you read, you know,
next April, because we can tell you what it's like, but you have to find out for yourself. Okay. But without drawing you into that web, for me, there's a number of pros and cons. One is it forces you into looking at the essence of the story. There's no space for purple prose. You cannot get away with many dud sentences. You really have to look at that. Particularly when somebody gives you a word limit, it's just like, oh, okay, I really have that adjective is dead to me. Those adverbs, be gone. You know, it's that sentence. Oh, I really liked it. But then you realise the only thing is you really liked it. That's it. It doesn't actually move the story forward. So it forces you into really improving the craft. So that's, for me, that's one thing. The other thing is you get to the end quicker, which from a writing perspective really is... So I'm going to advertise Pete's blog. I wrote something that went out last week, Flash Finish, which was very much about the act of finishing, the act of completion. Novels and longer short stories are really difficult to finish. But one of my favourite Neil Gaiman quotes is, you have to finish things. You learn by finishing things. And it's just that as somebody, when I was trying to get into writing short stories, it's like, oh yeah, you learn by finishing things. The minute you finish, it doesn't matter if it's 100 or 1,000 words, you look back on it and it's complete and you can see all of its flaws or all of its brilliance in one go. Whereas in other cases, you have to wait another 100,000 words. So that, for me, that's one of the things, I have to say.
I'm going to disagree totally with Kevlin here. Because as far as I'm concerned, stories all have their own natural length. The story...
That's in my blog post as well. I do say that.
Kevlin says that he says that in the blog post as well. What I was going to say is that story I read tonight, I actually had a word limit of 7,000 on. And when I finished it and I discovered it was only 1,000, I was pretty sure that Adele wouldn't take it. And I was quite relieved when she did. Equally, I tried writing a story for Long Hidden, the multicultural anthology that Kickstarter recently. And that one also had a word limit of 7,000, and I wrote something that just about came in under 7,000, and I looked at it and thought, I can't leave it like that. It needs more space. You know, the characters have to have more space in which to work out their relationship, so it's going to have to be longer, and I can't submit it to that thing. And I'm sure there will be things that I will write that will be longer than that, and equally other things will be short. Anybody else want to come in on that, Pete?
I'm really lazy.
That one.
And I tend towards brevity. So 1,000 words is actually quite a lot for me.
Anybody else? Jonathan?
Yeah, I also did a piece for Pete's blog. And I think the two aspects to it, that there's... It's a good blog. There's two aspects to it. There's one, there's coercion, which is this idea of having to write something to fit a small space, which actually forces you into a creative space as well, because it sort of forces you to think, how can I express this in as tight a way as possible? And that's an interesting challenge. And the other is permission, which is what you're saying about allowing a story to find its own length. And the thing is about flash fiction is it allows you to write stories that otherwise wouldn't have been written, because they wouldn't have had a length that sort of fitted a standard story, which is the great thing about it.
Pete, what is the address of your blog?
And how are you asking? http://brsbkblog@blogspot.
Thank you very much. Nancy, did you want to add to all this?
Yes, I mean, I just had a couple of ideas about Flash. One is I actually quite enjoy the act of editing. So if you have a word limit to work to, and say that word limit is 300 words, it's actually quite a discipline to start with, say, a 750-word story and distill it down. I mean, you could say slash it down to it, but hopefully it's an act of distillation. It's actually making it more itself rather than less itself. And sometimes, yeah, I do leave the sentences because I damn well like that sentence, and I'm going to keep it, but it has to justify itself. It has to be more useful than a sentence that's doing something functional. And I think the other reason I quite like Flash and short fiction generally, because that is, you know, that's what I write, is you don't have to spend quite so long with characters that you really wouldn't want to spend a whole novel with. I mean, would you really want to spend chapter after chapter with an antenatal Brian Cox? ask yourself honestly, is that really how you want to spend your time, either as a writer or a reader? So it allows you to explore an idea, but not to have to spend quite so long chewing through it.
I like editing other people. I hate editing myself. I need other people to do that. Any other questions or comments on the process of writing flash fiction? No, doesn't look like it. So, Kevlin, where can we find more of this fabulous flash stuff in the future?
Online is the broad question. Well, broad answer to that question, because that seems to be one of the most natural media for it. There's a lot of competitions, a lot of ad hoc anthologies and sites and projects and so on. So, I mean, really, it's a case of Google flash fiction, and you will find stuff. But that said, there's also a lot of competitions, more conventional competitions like Bridport Prize, that actually have a flash fiction category. The big build-up that I am leading towards is, bizarrely enough, we actually have a National Flash Fiction Day. Could there be such a thing? And yes, there is. And it's conveniently enough on the 21st of June, which coincides with the shortest night. The shortest stories for the shortest night. And bizarrely enough, there is actually going to be a couple of events in Bristol. If you go to if you Google National Flash Fiction Day, you will be taken to the site. We're going to do stuff here. There's going to be stuff around the country. There will undoubtedly be other competitions. There is going to be an anthology. If it's anything like the last 2 years, it'll be a 500-word limit. So you're invited to submit to that. And there is, from a Bristol point of view, if you go to Facebook, Bristol Flash is the page for the Bristol-based events. So obviously that's the only place you should look. Nowhere else. Ignore my earlier answers. That's about it.
Marvellous. Well, I look forward to all of that. And I'm going to have Kevlin on the radio as well, a little closer to the day, so he can tell us all about the exciting things. But if you're thinking of submitting to that anthology, get scribbling away straight away. And I think that's about all for this evening. So we will look forward to seeing you on the 16th for Murdering People with Magic, and on the 19th for Cavan and Justin. And unless there are any other announcements, I hereby declare this fringe done.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.